Blue Nose, not Paul Frazelak and Black Staggin. Windows updates. It's almost 3 minutes past the hour. My apologies for the late start.
We have some updates for your computer. This might take a little bit.
So we have here what we call a cold opening. No intro music. No, well, howdies. No, nothing like that. No, just me. Just me starting to talk, blather on, here on the third day of November, 2017. The final broadcast for this week. It's Friday on the front porch, on the horn, and hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's start. Jesus, these people. Oh, who knows? But with any luck at all, working. With any luck at all, the computer will reboot and we'll be good. But I was waiting for the update to finish. Just sitting here minding my own business, and the next thing I know, the damn computer starts updating. Thanks, Bill Gates. Not O'Brien. But here it is. Yes, Friday on the front porch. And right off the bat, program reminder. No program Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. I will tweet and Facebook when we get to the point where there's something to pay attention to. And so, and then I don't think there'll be any more DC trips for a while after that. But this is work that could lead to something good. So we kind of got to do it. And you know why? Because there's nobody else doing this work except Coal River Mountain Watch and the Ape Campaign. I mean, if there was, do you think they'd let hillbillies do it? Think about that. So here in about 55 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and convene the participants therein. Oh, for pity's sake, let me make sure I'm on Skype. Yeah, it's amazing what a Windows update can throw into your everyday normal typical pre-show evening. But by God, it did. It's been a very busy day. A lot of running around. Had to pick up the rental to go to D.C. And not a lot of selection over there at the rental place that I use. These costs are being, this is not horn money. This is simply, what was I saying? This is not horn fundraising. This is 8 campaign Coal River Mountain Watch fundraising. And so I reserved, because I got to leave the vehicle here for Agnes to have. So I reserved a sedan. But they don't have a whole lot of cars on the lot at this particular little place in this particular little town. So I drove away in a Nissan Armada. I know. Comfortable, and I won't be real beat up by the time I get to D.C., but I think I'm going to get about 10 gallons to the mile. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know that we have commenced the countdown. The engines are on. Yay. We've got some fun stuff interesting stuff to get into this evening. I gotta confess, that story, the language story where a guy's gonna go to Angola State Prison in Louisiana for life, over because he was not allowed a lawyer during an interview because the cops didn't want to stop the lawyer because they didn't know what a lawyer dog was. Jesus. I think, well, that really grabbed me because there's a willful degree of is this a word? Obtusity? Obtusion? For six members of a court with legal educations and legal backgrounds to say that they don't have any idea what the patois of the street sounds like. Well, what is this lawyer dog? If this was a big, powerful radio program with millions and millions and millions of listeners and me zooming around in a Gulfstream 5 and things like that, we would have a campaign to make sure that all six of those members of the Louisiana Supreme Court were henceforth referred to as a first reference in all journalistic enterprises as lawyer dog fill in the blank last name. Yeah, because we don't know what is this lawyer dog. Jesus. But anyway, we're at the beginning of the program, and there are thanks to send out this particular evening to those who subscribe and help keep the program on the air. There are six subscribers on the third day of November 2000 the third day of any given month, and they are among others Stephen in San Jose and Terry, of course, in Ohio. We know him by another name. And Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. These are the sponsors of the program this evening. A certain person far in the not-yet-frozen north. Janice in Janesville. And John in Talibandiana. Thank you, one and all, with the subscriptions. Between that and the fundraising we do during the program, we won't have, with any luck at all, we won't have a fundraising deficit when I get back a week from this evening. So I'm actually fully anticipating that we will have a fundraising-free Friday a week from tonight when I arrive back. And hopefully we'll not be delayed in leaving. Get out of D.C. early in the morning, get home by about 3-4 o'clock, and be ready to roll and catch up with everything that happens next week. Of course, we start the evening with about a $395 fundraising goal. Thanks to Larry for getting us started and knocking it down to $390. I understand I'm not counting the subscribers in that total, because that's how we're covering for what's going to happen while I'm gone. Same thing goes for our Patreon subscribers. And so, like, when we get back on a week from this evening, everyone that hasn't been named thus far will be the sponsors of that program, as opposed to having the sponsorship of some bullshit nutritional supplement. Which reminds me, Yes. If you're a gardener, you've probably seen it growing in your garden, and you thought it was a noxious weed. A strange little reddish burgundy stems running, creeping along the ground. Little oblate, shiny, sort of waxy little leaves. Mm-hmm. Have you tried parsimonious purslane from Horn Labs? Parsimonious purslane is all natural, vegan, gluten-free, free-range, non-GMO, and cruelty-free. Right. Parsimonious purslane. No. Pusillanimous purslane, because the parsnips are parsimonious. Pusillanimous purslane. It's a nutritious way to add a nutritional belly waller along the ground, just like purslane grows, to your each and every day. For only $29.95, you can get a 1 month supply of pusillanimous purslane capsules, and for only a dollar more, well, $30 and a dollar more, you can get your very own 2 month supply, plus a little bundle of test strips so that you can check your pusillanimous purslane capsules and find out that they are absolutely useless. Because, of course, like all other nutritional supplements advertised on the radio and the TV, pusillanimous purslane is strictly a bullshit nutritional supplement that is absolutely of no value whatsoever to you or anyone else. Pusillanimous purslane from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes. Use no hooks. Post no bills. This side up, FOB, COD, pusillanimous purslane from Horn Labs. And yes, before anyone can even ask. Oh, but it's too late. Someone's already asked. But Bob asks, Brother Deacon Asa, does pandemonious pumpernickel... pusillanimous purslane, damn it. How are we supposed to have a marketing department, Asa, with you doing things like that? Does pusillanimous purslane help a feller with his tent raisin? Tent raisin? Barn raisin, Brother Deacon Asa. Because pusillanimous purslane is one of those things that shows up on cleared ground. At least here in Appalachistan it does. Pusillanimous purslane from Horn Labs and the hard-working, ever-searching scientists therein. So we've got that taken care of. So anyway, yeah, in about 45 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and if you want, you can be part of the greater conversation. Because that's what Friday on the Front Porch is about. It's about creating a group dynamic of information processing. So here in about 45 minutes or so, Sparky will light up the he'll light up the Bob signal. And we will see who wants to participate in this extremely unique conversational radio enterprise. Okay? Sorry, I'm a little late getting to the chat room. If you would like to participate in the chat room, you know how that goes. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password, because everything around here is free. And you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Earther and Kid Mark and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. No sooner was I going into the chat room. Extra sensory perception works here after a decade or so in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Just as I'm going into the chat room and apologizing for not being in the chat room, Sparky's asking, "Are you coming to the chat room?" And there we are. It's like magic. Yes, it certainly is. Okay, so that's where we find ourselves. $390 to go in fundraising to wipe out the week and stay out of a hole for next week, including but not limited to a fundraising-free Friday, an FFF a week from tonight. Yay, if we can do this. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been neglecting to give out the mailing address. If you prefer, instead of being a Patreon subscriber or a subscriber through the PayPal interface on the horn, or just a regular PayPal, just doing a regular PayPal contribution, if you prefer the United States Postal Service for checks and money orders made payable to the horn, the address is the horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okie doke. Sounds good. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch and you'd like to, just get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and you'll be off and running. He'll show you the breadcrumb trail and tell you which quadrant of the sky to look at this evening, because it rotates, it changes when he shines the Bob signal on the clouds. No, Randy, you pay, the ads do the same thing to you that they do to me, don't they, Randy and PA? Did you also get auto insurance from the general? No, and that's just like how Scott can't remember the name of that product he's supposed to remember so that he can buy it at the Walgreens drugstore and have better memory. Mm-hmm. All right, then, where do we go? What do we get into this evening? Well, we've got a lot of potential stuff to work with. For me, well, Dancing Rick Perry kind of has to be at the top of that list, and along the way, and maybe we'll save it for maybe we'll save it for the roundtable conversation. We can also talk about the real talent that the Democratic Party has for scab picking and tearing itself to pieces, because it appears we're going to be doing that some more for a while. I got kind of tired of it early on in 2016, but apparently there are some people who just think it's better than a Sunday ice cream social on the church grounds. Just can't quite stay away from it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that'll take place during the roundtable conversation. But like I said, We can talk a little bit about Rick Perry, who's going to use coal to stop rape. Oh, Jesus. But I want to make sure that we don't blow past something that happened a couple of nights ago that is really, you know, rather important. These things matter. People deserve, among other things, to be remembered. It was Thornton, Colorado, whose name came up in the NRA death lottery Wednesday evening. We were just wrapping up prayer meeting Wednesday when it round and round she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows, and finally the little pointer stopped on Thornton, Colorado, and the Walmart Supercenter there. And a 47-year-old white man by the name of Scott Ostrom, well, he walked into that Walmart and began firing, and it's described in journalism, in articles and reports, he began firing his Freedom Protector nonchalantly at people in Wally World. And then, after he'd shot some people, he turned around and simply walked out of Walmart again. Because, see, in Colorado, as in so many other states in the Union, a guy walking around with a gun who walks into Walmart with a gun and then walks out of Walmart with a gun, well, it's no big deal. because you might remember, oh, we were talking with our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hi, Kevin. It was a couple of years back. And a story had developed where a man decided to walk down the middle of a street in, was it a Denver neighborhood? I can't remember. You know, with a long gun just slung over his shoulder. And one concerned citizen called 911 and said, I'd like to report the fact that there's a man with a rifle slung over his shoulder walking down the middle of the street. And the 911 operator responded, well, that's perfectly normal, citizen, because this here is America, and that's his constitutional right, because he's got a right to keep and bear arms, for he is a defender of freedom. And basically that was the end of the conversation. And then the guy went and killed somebody. Once again, it's almost like a script. There's little known about the motive of the white man who did the shooting. A lot of speculation that he may have been an evangelical religious maniac. Good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, ammo-sexual Christian! With good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, ammo-sexual Christian bigotry against his Hispanic neighbors. Because I don't know how to pronounce Latinx. L-A-T-I-N-X. Because we can't say Latino, because that apparently leaves the women out, and you can't say Latina, because that leaves the men out, so we go Latinx. Hell, most people don't even know how to pronounce the X in iPhone X in this country. They don't know it's 10, even though it's not 10, it's Deckham. Well, there you go, Earther pointing out, a gunned-up society is a polite society, paraphrasing something a gundamentalist actually said. Well, that's true. So, he proved to be a successful deployer of the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Yes, because, what started out as a fairly ordinary day for Pamela Marquez, Carlos Moreno, and Victor Vasquez. Pamela was 52, Carlos was 66, and Victor was 26. You'll notice the use of the past tense there. Well, it was an ordinary day starting out for them, but by the time the NRA and Scott Ostrom were done, it was no ordinary day whatsoever for them, because it was their last day on Earth. Meanwhile, it took the police some 5 hours to find Scott Ostrom, aged 47. Because, a guy walks in, he murders three people in Walmart, he walks out with his gun, and he just sort of disappears into the crowd. White guy with a gun? Oh, hell, that could be anybody now, couldn't it? This is a paragraph for the ages. Thornton Police Spokesman Victor Avila said that identifying and pursuing Ostrom took 5 hours, mainly because the manhunt was made more complicated by virtue of the fact that a whole bunch of the shoppers in Wally World pulled out their own freedom protectors when the bullets started flying. Once the building was safe enough to get into it, we started reviewing the surveillance video as quickly as we could, Avila said. That's when we started noticing that a number of individuals had pulled weapons. So not only is a gunned-up society a polite society, at least from a law enforcement standpoint, it's a confusing society. If only Scott Ostrom had called somebody dog, well, then the police would have just been more confused, wouldn't they? Because they don't understand that street talk. But then again, Scott Ostrom is a 47-year-old, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian who doesn't use that, he doesn't speak ghetto. No, he speaks the Queen's English, I'm quite certain. Well, there you go, exactly, Arthur. Black guy with a gun. Oh, my, OMG, Black Panther 3, it's Helter Skelter. White guy with a gun. Feed him! Exactly. But he was eventually arrested. I have a photograph of him here wearing a fetching one-piece baby blue jumpsuit with sort of a Peter Pan collar and a zipper right up the middle, wearing some handcuffs and not weeping or anything with remorse. No, he was long gone from the Wally world. Meanwhile, the Thornton, Colorado Police Department continued to try to figure out if he was still in the store and ready to bust out some more freedom on some more Wally World shoppers. Because spokesman Avila said, at that point, you know, when we noticed a number of individuals had pulled weapons, at that point, as soon as you see that, that's the one you try to trace through the store, only to maybe find out that's not him, and we're back to ground zero again, starting to look again. That's what led to the extended time. Yes, as the folks at Think Progress point out, where concealed weapons are concerned, Colorado has language in its concealed weapons law that says the state shall issue. Not may, but shall. And in Colorado, Coloradans with guns can take their guns into Wally World, and there's not much anybody can do about it. Not even Wally World. Yep. So, you had a bunch of good guys with guns who only served to confuse the issue and make it possible for a bad guy with a gun to maybe go out and do more harm. Here's the problem. Nobody knew he was a bad guy with a gun until he pulled the trigger. Larry points out, these idiots and simpletons think that a real problem solver is something named revolver. Okay, you get a little jingle for that, Larry. Okay, yeah. And Brother Deacon Asa says, to paraphrase Papa Bear Bill O'Reilly, guy walks into a Walmart, guy shoots a few innocent people, guy walks out of a Walmart. You can't explain that. Well, of course not. There is no knowing There is no way of knowing the mind of a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual Christian. We will never know what the Almighty, creator of the universe and his little boy, the Savior, said to him to make him go in and blow away three Hispanic people. Mm-hmm. No, just can't know. I'm sure it has nothing to do with that concealed carry law. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that people can take guns anywhere they want to in this country and do pretty much as they please with them. And the police, when they're doing good work, are absolutely helpless to stop it. Because the police cannot predict which white guy is going to go nuts. And by the way, just for the purposes of comparison and contrast, consider a guy with a long, scraggly-ass beard practices for a year and then runs his truck into the bike lane in or around Times Square in Manhattan. He then jumps out of the truck and yells, "Aloha, snack bar," at which point in time, everybody knows that, "Hey, we're under attack from the Izzes!" And thus begins a round-the-clock news cycle detailing the fearful reality of our terrorist world. A world in the clutches of religious maniacs who will kill for nothing more than their religious beliefs. Now, compare that with this story. Anyway, how much of the 24-hour news cycle was devoted to a slaughter of Hispanic people in a suburban Denver Walmart by another white Christian guy? Yeah, I know. Not much. Not much at all, huh? No. And we won't get any news stories about the funeral costs for Pamela Marquez, age 52, Carlos Moreno, age 66, and Victor Vasquez, age 26. No, we won't get that either. And I don't even know if the NRA, America's most powerful, politically connected, wealthiest domestic terror organization, will even bother to send out thoughts and prayers. Because after all, well, Vasquez, Moreno, Marquez, yeah, they didn't have a high freedom quotient, did they? Depending on how you look at the situation, Carlos Moreno and Victor Vasquez, 66 years old and 26 years old, respectively, they had the good fortune of dying at the scene. They got hit and they shuffled off this mortal coil post-haste. They stood not upon the order of their going, delivered at 3,000 or so feet per second, but went at once. Pamela Marquez, however, age 52, was not so lucky. She clung to life. Maybe she had kids. Maybe she had a precious granddaughter, and she was struggling for all she was worth to hang on to that life so that she could see her grandbaby or grandbabies grow up. But she lost that struggle as well. Because sometimes, in order to feed the tree of liberty, it must be watered with the blood of tyrants and grannies. It is its natural manure. I had a little snack just before the program, about fit to puke, just having said that. But that's what they do, these gun goobers. They hoot and holler about natural manure and trees of liberty whenever anybody talks about the issue of guns in this country. Why can't we keep our guns at home? See, Here's the thing. It becomes very easy. It becomes really easy for law enforcement. If everybody keeps their guns at home, then the people who have guns and are out and about can get arrested by the police and sent to prison. Unless they've got a really, 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 no kidding, honest to goodness, valid reason for running around with a deadly engine of death tucked in their pocket, or on a holster on their hip, or under their arm, or in the small of their back, or down in the top of their boot in a little ankle holster. Seems pretty clear to me, although you would never get the NRA to admit it, that Scott Ostrom, aged 47, had no business with a firearm. Not at Walmart, not anywhere else. But therein, of course, lies the whole good guy with a gun, bad guy with a gun thing. Because, see, up until the moment he squeezed the trigger, up until the moment when he sent those bullets tumbling and hurtling through the bodies of Moreno and Vasquez and Marquez, he was a good guy with a gun. See how it works? But it was just a pistol here, so there's no bump stock to look at. So it's just a pistol, and, well, you can't blame the tool. You don't blame the hammer when you hit yourself in the thumb when you're nailing a nail into a board, do you? You don't blame the hammer. No, but you do sometimes wonder why somebody's using a hammer to glue two pieces of plastic together, because a hammer's not very good in gluing operations. But don't worry. I mean, this story didn't get a hell of a lot of attention anyway. Don't worry. We're not going to do anything about it. Because it is your job, citizen, to be ready at any time on a moment's lack of notice to die for your country. Do you think, how about this? Could we come up with something similar to the Purple Heart? You know, remember, in the military, the Purple Heart just requires being wounded in combat. You don't have to be wounded real badly, and you don't have to display any particular valor in it. We just came up with the Purple Heart because it was a way of recognizing, God damn it, you got hurt or killed, and it was in the service of your country. I mean, we got one for Uncle Fred. And as far as I know, he was just sitting around when the artillery shell hit and sent that little fragment, that little piece of shrapnel into his knee that festered and turned into septicemia. And then, yeah, goodbye, Fred. Maybe we could come up with a medal that we give to the grieving families of people who die as a result of the NRA's war on decency. And maybe we can talk about this in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. What we'd call the award. What it would look like. Who'd sign the citation. And who'd be responsible for awarding it? In a just world, it would be awarded by the National Rifle Association, and it would be an award for freedom, for dying in defense of freedom. God, I wish I knew some hackers. Wouldn't it be cool to hack the NRA's website and put up a list of people who have died in shootings in America? You know, where a good guy with a gun became a bad guy with a gun in the space and time that it took for the trigger to pull and engage the firing mechanism, and just put all their names there and award them whatever we're going to call this award. Because that's the reality of it. If, as the NRA claims, we have to have all of these firearms in order for America to remain a free people, then the people who die because we have all of these firearms are dying for freedom. Plain and simple. Could we at least come up as a condition of the award? Could we maybe set up some sort of national program whereby the people who are killed get their burial expenses covered, and maybe get a flag to go over their coffin and an honor guard? No guns. They've had enough with the guns, I'd say. But they don't have to bear the funeral expenses themselves. And maybe the ones who get shot and survive, maybe they get their expenses covered, you know, for the healing process. I have not closed the tab with this website on it, just to give you an idea of the costs involved. Every so often I go back over to the tab and I reload it. The GoFundMe page for Tina Frost, who was shot in Las Vegas, at Las Vegas, she was shot in the head, is at $591,000, and they've established a trust fund to administer the funds that have been received. And that $591,000 is not a damn drop in the bucket. But what if we had a national program that would promise to pay for her support and her hospital bills and her rehab bills because she had taken one for freedom? Hell, you could write the bill and you could just wrap in the victims of America's shooting gallery. You could just wrap the victims of America's roulette wheel of death and destruction into the VA system and make them eligible for VA care. Because again, they were maimed for freedom, just like any soldier on any battlefield. And just like any soldier on any battlefield, they were utterly powerless to stop the bullet that was coming for them, regardless of who fired it. So, just by the way, ultimately, it took the Thornton, Colorado police 14 hours to find 47-year-old good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian Joel Ostrom. You know, Ostrom is very linguistically close to Osteen. I wonder. Nah. Took 14 hours for them to catch him. And he didn't get caught by the police so much as he got caught by the lousy traffic in the greater Denver area. They caught up with him because he tried to flee
He got stuck in traffic.
So that's 9 hours it took after they figured out who the shooter was. After they figured it out, it wasn't that guy pulling out a pistol, and it wasn't that woman hauling a pistol out of her Freedom Protector brassiere, and it wasn't that woman over there hauling her 8-inch 44 Magnum hog leg with a muzzle you could drive a Volkswagen Beetle down out of her Freedom Protecting diaper bag for her infant in arms. After they figured out who all it wasn't, well, they finally figured out who it was. Ever the practical man, Randy in PA, says, if I got wounded in war or otherwise injured on the job, in lieu of a medal, I'd like a fat check. Well, this is America, Randy. Fat chance. Because consider how this is going to play out. Let's say the estates of Ms. Marquez and Mr. Moreno and Mr. Vasquez, let's say they all sue Wally World, where, I might remind you, you can go and buy a gun and carry it out the same day. You don't even have to bring your gun to Walmart. You can go to Walmart, buy your gun, buy your ammo, and then start shooting people. It's a one-stop shop. But Walmart, upon being sued, will say, hey, we're not responsible. We're not liable. The law of the state of Colorado says that people who have a concealed carry permit can carry their Freedom Protectors in Walmart. How are we going to stop them? How are we going to prevent them from coming through the door? We can't search them. We can't put up magnetometers and metal detectors because we have no right to confiscate their weapons because the NRA owns our ass. Well, not ours, not Walmart. We've still got a little bit more money than the NRA has, but it certainly owns the state government of Colorado. Oh, wait a minute. This is full cowbell material, Larry. 14 hours, Larry says, for the police to figure out he was just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. And that's the end of the singing tonight, if you're lucky. Yes. Larry observes, fuck, we've got to be the most paranoid culture on Earth by a long shot. Funny how our own paranoia is on a fast collision course to doing us in. All because of freedom! I wonder why they don't have such freedom concerns for a young, scared woman considering an abortion or if someone wants to toke and smoke on a fucking plant that grows from the earth. Because that ain't in the Constitution, except for the fact that the Supreme Court done said that a woman's right to choose is in the Constitution, but you can't find the word abortion nowhere in the Constitution, but you can find arms in the Constitution right there in the holy, sacred, elevated, God-given Second Amendment. Yes, sirree. It's right there. And so Ms. Marquez and Mr. Vasquez and Mr. Moreno had to die for freedom. Because Wolverines! Marty reminded me that we hadn't had a Wolverine moment in a while. And what better time than a freedom protecting story in Colorado, where the movie Red Dawn was originally set, was it not? Yes. And a reminder coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob. If you're black, you could go to Walmart and pick up a pellet gun and get shot dead by the police.
Absolutely. But see, that was a case of the NRA thinking of us, too. This way, if anybody can carry a gun in Walmart, then somebody with a gun in Walmart doesn't have to get killed by police.
See, right? No, I don't think it was the pellet gun. It was the color of the skin. No, dear Jesus. Mm-hmm. So, that's just an in memoriam. Just a matter of taking a moment to note that the lives of a 53-year-old, a 66-year-old, and a 26-year-old were at least worth mentioning. That, in the words of Kurt Vonnegut, they got to be sitting up mud for a little while. That they got to look around at the mystery and the majesty, and sometimes the monotony, of being a living thing on this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling in its elliptical, helical way through the universe, and then their light was extinguished like a candle. And their life force went wherever it is that the candle flame goes when it goes out. Why, by Jove, Devin, I think you've invented a word based upon the note that Ron and Raleigh just sent in. Devin determined, yes, Afro-pellititis. That's quality. Wait a minute. Yeah, you get a full ring for that, Devin. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I know. We should be talking about the president's bullshit tax plan or something to do with the criminals in his administration, because that's what everybody else is talking about, right? But maybe, just maybe, I'm a little bit different. Or this program's a little bit different. On Fridays, we have an extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Ordinary people who go through their ordinary lives and yet prove themselves every day to be quite extraordinary. Because it's extraordinary just to be here. I mean, how much more extraordinary can you be than to say that every human being who's ever been born, with the exception of identical twins, has had no other person identical to them in all of human history? It's pretty extraordinary. And so I will give Ms. Moreno, Mr. Vasquez, I will give them, I mean, Ms. Marquez, Mr. Moreno, and Mr. Vasquez, I will give them pride of place in this program this evening. Because for 52 years, 66 years, and 26 years, respectively, they earned it. They earned it. And so here endeth the filibobster. If you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, I heartily encourage you so to do. Like I said before, just send a contact. If you've never done it before, just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and he will get you right on the program. Well, at least he'll try. He'll show you the breadcrumb trail and shine the Bob signal on the, off the clouds for you. Okay. So, yeah, break time. We're trying to raise $395 tonight. We're still at $395, or $390, rather. Not $395, $390. $390. And with any luck at all, that'll happen sometime, you know, between now and 9 or over the weekend or something like that. Oh, well, gosh, Larry, thanks. You made my week with the cowbell. Much love to you and Agnes and the kids. By the way, I still remember Ferg singing that night on Facebook Live. He's good at it. Tell him to do it more often. Okay, speaking of Walmart, I'm off to there now, so my anxiety meter's rising. Good luck in Swamp City next week. Thank you. He is doing more of it. In fact, he's doing more of it tonight. Well, see, I know, because, I try. I mean, we've got a bullshit nutritional supplement that we're hustling. We're trying really hard to be a real, live, honest-to-God professional talk radio program. Asa asks, why ain't you talking about Hillary and her crooked campaign tactics, you DNC shill? I'll tell you why. Because Morales, Vasquez, and Moreno were more important. Ron says, Ron and Raleigh says, I'm ready. Let's go to the round table to see what concerts Billable Rick has gone to and how many women women he's dating. I'm living vicariously. Oh, he has concert plans, and I'm worried. I'm worried, I tell you. I'm worried. So, yeah, let's take a break. And if you want to get in on the if you want to get in on the conversation, I've made it abundantly clear how to do that. And maybe, just maybe, during the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, we can get around to talking about Rick Perry hydrocarbon rape preventer. You know, somebody's got to be pretty stupid for the Sierra Club to rouse itself and say, this guy really needs to resign. Because after this these latest comments, the Sierra Club did exactly that. They said, no, enough. This guy's got to quit. Okay, Larry hasn't left for Wally World yet. He said, wait, hold on. I'll give Asa a reason why. It's because we're not following Trump's look at this shiny shit over here while I run out the back door bullshit game. Parting out the door shot by Bob. Oh, no. Parting out the door shot, period. Bye, Bob. Well, at least you didn't call me lawyer, dog. And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, if I can talk a few Hornedanistas into matching my $35, that'd be plain old awesome sauce. So, there we go. What is that? Like, 10 more people at $35, and that's plus the... Yeah. That'll get it done. Subject line from James, stop Billable Rick! Stop him before he kills again. And he's not even using a gun. He's like Darth Vader. He's more powerful than Darth Vader. Darth Vader could kill with a look. All Rick has to do is show up. All right, break time. Let's fire up the round table. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be back. I think. Ah, you bastards. Hold on. I'm really going to have to do this, aren't I? I forgot about the, I forgot about the update. All right, let's find out something. Yes, everybody who's plagued by a Windows machine knows that sound. Okay, now we can play the bumper music. Yeah, yay. We'll be back. I'm Bob. What is that apocryphal, and I think it's probably apocryphal, I don't know, maybe it really happened, the story about that song, Helter Skelter by the Beatles off the White Album. Pete Townsend gave an interview and he said, "Oh, the Who have just made the most obnoxious, loud, noisy rock and roll album ever." And that's, of course, not Pete Townsend's voice. And Paul McCartney responds with that and says, "Well, we can make some obnoxious music, too, with the Beatles." Mm-hmm. So it's 8 minutes past the hour. That's not Paul McCartney's voice either. Jesus, why don't I stop? Silent R. Lamar tells me to leave Rick alone. I want to hear more about the stupid. Believe me, there's plenty of stupid to go around. Okay. Before we go to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, and I'll let him explain it in further detail, Brother Deacon Asa put that challenge on the table for 10 more folks at $35. Well, Billable Rick follows up with the Keep Jerry Lee Lewis Alive Challenge. "I just got tickets yesterday," Billable Rick says, "to see Jerry Lee Lewis on November 24th at a 2,000-seat renovated Art Deco facility in downtown L.A. called the Ace Theater. Since Jerry Lee's already up in his years, 82, I'm pledging $25 to the program and will agree not to go to the concert if 15 other Horn listeners pledge a like amount. Please stop me from depleting the already thin roster of surviving classic rockers. Who's next? Little Richard, stay away from L.A., and Billable Rick, Little Richard." Thank you, Billable Rick. Well, with that, we got to go over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hey, Sparky.
I got to take a break from laughing.
Stop him before he rock you're and off. Rolls again.
So you're off to D.C. to tilt at windmills again, huh?
No, we're not tilting this time. We're actually accomplishing something.
Okay.
We will be hosting. Oh. We put together a briefing, and a couple of the scientists responsible for some of the suppressed science. We'll be talking about it live and in person, and there's not a goddamn thing the Trump administration can do about it.
Well, you see what happened. Each thing that came out today from their, I forget the name of the committee.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit there. What did you say?
The Trump administration had to put out a climate change statement today. One of their groups, you know, global warming's real. And
yeah.
Caused by fossil fuels and all that.
That must have been really galling.
Well, climate change has happened here again. I mean, it's like somebody turned the switch off.
Is it cold again?
Yeah, I'm waiting for rain to come. It's been windy and blowing. Because as soon as it gets cold, the leaves start turning here.
Well, we finally got color on the trees about 3 weeks late. It's kind of pretty around here right now when the sun shines. Sun just hasn't been doing a lot of shining.
Well, there's no sun at all today.
And I checked the weather forecast for D.C., and it's one of those, gee, I wish I still had my trusty old trench coat moments, because it ain't going to do nothing but rain all week in D.C. The highs in the mid-50s, lows in the 30s. So that makes walking around in a suit a real joy.
You know, it went from T-shirt weather one day to sweatshirt weather.
Yeah, you start out in the morning and you're okay and you're roasting by noon. I left here yesterday to go and get the car done. And I went with a pair of jeans and a T-shirt and a fleece over that. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, I was peeling that fleece off as fast as I could because I was freaking roasting.
Well, that's what usually happens around here come late January, early February.
Oh, I love January in the Bay Area. That was sure nice.
Well, the San Francisco, the climate is different all the time.
Well, it used to be fairly dependable, except for the fact that it didn't get up to like 90. Now that's out the window too.
Oh yeah.
Pretty soon you'll have people walking around San Francisco in like, you know, puffy parkas.
Anyway, the man cave is getting bombarded by pieces of redwood tree.
Oh, is that what that clack was a minute ago?
Yeah, probably.
I figured it was, like either that or a mousetrap going off.
No, there's little cones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're
about the size of a big marble. And they start dropping off. It sounded like somebody's throwing rocks at the building.
That wasn't one, was it?
No. Why? I hit my mic, I think.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody might have been, maybe Grady the dog getting a little affectionate or something.
Grady's over here on the floor.
It was the damnedest thing. We've got two cats in the house. We've got the Siamese, and then we've got this little black feral kitten that we've been raising for about a year. Because otherwise she was going to die a miserable death. And so she's learned to be pretty affectionate, but there's still some feral cat in her. And so this morning, before Enterprise came to pick me up, because they're the company that picks you up.
Yes, I know.
Just ask them, they'll tell you. I was standing and I was making myself a cup of decaf. No decaf emails, please. We've been through this. Before I did that, I stopped and I petted her because she was running around my legs and everything. And I picked her up and I held her and I petted her and she was purring like crazy. And I was like, well, now I got to make my coffee. So I set her back down and turned to attend to my coffee making. And lo and behold, she jumped up on the freezer behind me and then just, I don't know, had some feral genetic moment and decided that she was going to jump up on me. And she did, and startled the daylights out of me. I never thought I'd have to worry about turning my back on my cat. And jumped up and was like, trying to do the whole parrot cat sit on my shoulder thing. And I've got this black long sleeve T-shirt with a little bit of it's got a little bit of give in it because it's like 98% cotton, 2% spandex or something like that. I like it though. So she doesn't get a good purchase, and being a cat naturally, she sinks her claws in and lets them hang on all the way down my back and manages to rip about a dime-sized hole in my favorite damn T-shirt along with several other tiny little claw-shaped punctures, which went on to puncture yours truly.
Wow.
Now I'm worried about her. Not that there's anything wrong with her, but that, maybe she's been putting on for all this time and only acting friendly, and that secretly she just wants... I don't know, maybe she's just trying to... she's a little house panther, and every now and then she just has to do that kind of thing.
Back when I was in the Air Force, we had a little house in Marysville, California. Cat's name was Alice Cooper.
Well, that's a pretty cool name for a cat to have.
But a cat would wait until you're just really stoned, and then he'd attack you.
Well, it sounds, unfortunately, I wasn't, but yeah, roughly the same. Yeah.
He'd come out behind the couch and jump up and grab the back of your head and start clawing you.
Brother Deacon Asa said, regarding cat jumps on Bob, further proof that Bob Kincaid's admired by a bunch of pussies. 7:18 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and the program is officially in the gutter. Good for us.
Mm-hmm. Now I got an attack dog here standing next to me at the bar. He's got his paws up on the bar.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, hey, it's Steve.
Hey, yes. Steve. Hey, I have a pressing question for Bob.
The dry cleaners is closed, but go ahead.
Oh, that's good. I would give you a cowbell if I had one.
Okay, they didn't deserve the full cowbell, but I gave myself one anyway.
Hey, that's the California smuggler's cowbell.
Yes, it is.
My pressing question is this. How does a team that lost to an unranked team make the playoffs? I'm sorry, I've been wondering about this all work.
My honor is deeply impugned. My asparagus has had aspersions cast upon it. The very idea. One, how is Clemson in the mix? Two, what in the is Georgia doing at number one? I mean, is that some sort of a mercy fuck or what? I don't know.
You know what? Let me ask you. I don't even know. Remember you and I had this conversation over on the messenger at Facebook. They need to scrap this. You know, I think they came up with the only thing that's worse than what the bowl system was. The notion that you have people preliminary picks for a playoff before the season. Can you imagine if they did that in baseball? Here's who we think are going to be in the playoffs or in any sport. It's absurd.
Well, it's kind of silly. And look, there's a way to go about this where you keep the bowl structure in place and you just make some of the lesser bowls playoff, early playoff games.
Exactly like you and I talked about. This isn't hard, but it's all about money, and that's why they do it this way.
Well, of course it's all about money because football is big business, whether it's the NFL or the NCAA. The NCAA is just a professional sport. It's just a different league of the same sport with slightly different rules. It's like Canadian football, only interesting. Oh, okay. I'm going to get the emails now.
Oh, Ron is fuming now, Bob.
Oh, Ron's pissed that the entire Canadian Horn family's mad at me.
I don't know, Bob, if you saw my post.
Ron's a hockey fan.
Yeah, but he's a football guy, too. I don't know that he follows the... What is the Canadian Football League football team in Ottawa?
The Ottawa... Might be the Argonauts.
That sounds right.
Well, I know there's Rough Riders and Argonauts.
That's Toronto.
And, yeah, that's Toronto.
Toronto. I know the Rough Riders, I think, are Calgary.
Calgary, yeah.
There's the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which strikes me as being just a little bit redundant.
BC Lion.
Let's ask the internet.
The Ottawa Red Blacks.
What are a bunch of American guys talking about Canadian football teams? We that's not our place. We shouldn't be talking about this.
Because
you know?
We're simple.
The Grey Cup's coming up soon.
that's a really weird name, Bob. The Red Blacks.
Or is it
in French rouge et noir?
Ah, the rouge et noir. Mm. But that's Ottawa, so it's not really French, is it?
Well,
no, it's
my partner. It's both.
And the Montreal Alouettes. Okay, that makes sense. That's French.
Mm-hmm. But the Red Blacks? What the heck? The Red Blacks.
That's called all the good names are taken, and we're just going to be the Red Blacks.
Edmonton Eskimos.
Blue Bombers. Yeah.
What the heck? No wonder all the NHL teams left.
Well, no wonder it never caught on down here. Go Red Blacks. Okay. I mean, Red Sox. Okay. Just a great little moment of history. It used to drive my father crazy when he would hear someone refer to the Reds as the Red Legs. Because they were the Reds when they began. They were just the Reds. Mm. But as a result of the Bolshevik scare, people started calling them Red Legs so that people wouldn't think communists were playing baseball in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Actually, they weren't the Reds when they first started.
What were they?
The Red Stockings.
Okay, yeah, the Red Stockings, and then the... Right, yes. Yeah.
And then, you're right, they became the Reds, and they pulled that crap in the 50s with calling them the Red Legs. Stupid.
Yeah, that was...
Because obviously... Yeah. And let me tell you what, knowing what I know about Cincinnati, whether they're communists, communists playing in Cincinnati is the last thing you have to worry about.
Well, I mean, just the idea of Big Ted Kluszewski being, a bomb-throwing Trotskyite, no.
You'd be risking your life as a communist living in Cincinnati or playing in Cincinnati. Come on.
Yes, no kidding.
But hey, look, this is probably the only radio program, progressive, conservative. There's probably not a sports program in the country today that made mention of Ted Kluszewski. So, there.
Cowbell for yourself, Bob.
Maybe a single jingle.
Now, what was his nickname?
Big Clue.
Uh-huh. And what was he famous for?
Ripping the sleeves off his shirt because he couldn't get his arms through them.
Damn, Bob, I'm impressed.
I was raised a Reds fan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, hell yes.
I was too.
Southern West Virginia, in the age of rail, had a pretty intimate connection to Cincinnati. Because you could get there from here.
Gotcha. I know WLW, which is the flagship station for the Reds. I don't know if it's still that way because they may have put restrictions on it. But that used to be one of the strongest stations anywhere.
Yeah, 50K Clear Channel, before the restrictions came in, it was a blowtorch. The same with WSM in Nashville. I know WSM could be heard in the UK during the Second World War.
Oh, my God. I could hear WLW up in... My dad and I took a couple fishing trips up in Canada, and we were about 200 kilometers north of Sault Ste. Marie, and we could... In the middle of really, really nowhere, we could get WLW at night.
That's like 52 feet in real measurement, isn't it? 200 kilometers? No, I'm sorry. I'm being a... See, do you see? I could be a really good conservative radio host. Just saying snide, snarky little shit like that. That's like 52 feet in American measurements. Yeah, because feet is bigger than little centimeters.
It's about 124 miles.
Yeah. The guy that set up the original rig here, brilliant radio engineer, was telling me that he had seen, because he had gone and toured, radio engineers do really nerdy things, and they like to see tubes. They take trips to go see tubes. And there were, like, back in the day of unregulated blowtorch AM radio, there were vacuum tubes that were 6 feet tall and as big around as two human beings. Unless he was pulling my leg. I don't think he was. That sounds like some American exceptionalism is what that is. Let's see. Oh, wow. No, I didn't. Ron in Raleigh just said, did you know there's pro football in China? The Shanghai Lions won the championship last year. Wow. I had no idea. Well, Dadgummit. Pretty soon they'll be buying the Super Bowl. Be part of the one road, one ring policy. One Super Bowl ring, that is.
NBA goes there in the exhibition season for basketball. Chinese are big on basketball.
Oh, absolutely. You know, years and years and years ago now, the ad with Yao Ming and Yogi Berra, that was a beautiful, beautiful little piece of advertising. Once again, we find out the things that get this community going. Larry says, shit, Bob, I had to pull over. I heard this on my new phone. Your CFL talk, damn it. I'm an expert on that league, the teams and history. Ottawa used to be called the Renegades for a couple of years, but they were known as the Rough Riders before then. Yes, so, and that's also the name of the Saskatchewan franchise.
Yeah, Open Saskatchewan? Open Sarsaparilla?
No, sorry, different cartoon. One was the Rough Riders, one word. The other was Rough Riders with a space and two words. Due to extreme racism, Warren Moon had to spend six seasons there before the Oilers signed him in 84. He won five Grey Cups and darn near a sixth in his last year. Okay, into Wally World now. Yep. So, Marty says Super Bowl 55 in Beijing at the Bird's Nest. It could happen. But this, of course, has taken us away from the greater question of why in the, is Georgia number one? Because they beat Florida? Because they cost Jim McElwain his job? I'm sort of stymied here. No. Saskatchewan, yeah. You know, a little bit south of Saskatoon. Old country song, says Larry, putting the phone up now. Oh, you'll be back, Larry. You'll be back. You know you will. And by the way, it's good. Steve, we've missed you the last couple of weeks, and I'm beginning to worry about Steve from Georgia, Stan. This is his...
Why, he cuts out on Friday?
This is his second Friday on the front porch in a row that he's missed. He used to be a regular and stuff, so, I mean, he's in... He's participating in stuff during the week. It's just, I don't know, maybe he and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy are out painting the hills of North Georgia red or something.
Or he could have an issue with his mom.
Or an issue with his internet. Windstream apparently has a degree of suckitude rivaled only by Frontier.
Yeah, we lost our internet connection the other day. It was strange.
So was it just the wind or that, because you've got...
I think they were working on something.
Yeah, because generally speaking, you've got competent internet.
Yeah, well, it's Charter cable. Except the time when the truck... knocks the line down that goes over Interstate 5.
Yeah, that'll slow your speed a little bit. Yeah, I had so much going on this week. Allegedly, Frontier got things fixed, but lo and behold, I'm still getting about half the speed that I'm paying for, and I didn't have time to call and tear into them again. Jesus, this is silly.
Hey, we have the person here to put in a testimonial on the Horn Facebook page today on
Sassy Sassafras.
Yeah, Steve said he got some.
Oh yeah, good stuff. That Sassy Sassafras, even if it is a little carcinogenic. I mean, in modern 21st century America, who's really counting the carcinogens?
I don't know.
Speaking of which, though, carcinogens, hydrocarbons, that sort of thing. Did anybody else? Because I mentioned this during the filibobster. Was anybody else aware of the fact that that coal can stop rape?
I thought it was all fossil fuels.
Well, it is. It is. It's coal, oil, and gas. Countries in Africa can drill or frack or blast their way out of rape. If you just got yourself some coal-fired electricity or some oil-fired, maybe some cars driving around, or some natural gas-fired electricity, the rape in Africa will end because Rick Perry done said so. Oh, by the way, going back to WLW for a minute, maybe you heard this growing up, Steve. Scott says, back when they had an experimental permit to run at 500 kilowatts, the wire fences at farms near the station's Mason, I think, Ohio transmitter and tower site would audibly play the WLW monster signal. Cows at nearby dairy farms were said to have stopped producing milk. That sounds like the sort of story that Les Nessman would break and maybe win a copper cob or a proud pig or something. That's the silver sow, Johnny. Right, you are, Les. The Ohio Newshawk Award. So, I mean, you're in New York, Steve. Tell me. Is anybody besides Donald Trump screaming, kill him, kill him, kill him now, death to blah, blah, blah? Or is it just sort of like, well, okay, we'll get around to it. We'll keep him in jail. He's going to love Rikers Island, and then we'll try him and kill him.
Honestly, I mean, my office is, it's a 5-minute walk from there. And one of the people who I share a desk with, his two kids were at a school that was on lockdown when it happened. And he hasn't said a word about it. Nobody, I haven't heard anybody. I mean, I don't watch the news. I know I probably shouldn't do that, but I generally don't watch news, and I can't stand local news because whenever I do accidentally happen to see it on TV, the first 12 minutes is about X shot Y shot Z, A raped B ran over C, and I don't watch it, but I haven't heard. You know what I always find is that the only people who get all uptight about any violence in New York or any of the of those places are the people in the red states.
Oh, you mean Emery and Marvelline out in Busted Knuckle?
Emery and Marvelline out in Busted Knuckle. Who? Well, if only them New Yorkers had all had guns, this wouldn't have happened. I kind of like my strict gun control.
You know what? I bet I can think of three Hispanic people in Thornton, Colorado, who might be fans, you know, if they had the chance, being how they're all dead and stuff. Oh, by the way, I've got to pass out a cowbell. With regard to Scott's earlier note about the wires playing the WLW broadcast and the cows quit giving milk, Earther points out, see, Jill Stein was right. The cows were affected by the radio waves. Silent R. Lamar says, I can see gas stopping rape due to the smell. It's hard to focus when holding your breath.
I think that's hilarious.
And I'll leave out the rest of it because I don't want the email that it will occasion me getting. But that's an odorant they add. Natural gas coming out of the ground doesn't have any smell. And by the way, Ron and Raleigh, in regard to the CFL, the Canadian Football League would be a lot more interesting if they'd shorten the field from a half mile long.
No, it's only the end zones that are a half mile long.
Yeah, the football field itself is about the size of a postage stamp, right?
The football football field's 55 yards, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And the end zones are 20 yards deep.
The end zones go on forever. You really can't. There's really not a quarterback alive with enough arm to throw a fade to the corner of a Canadian Football League end zone. Tough crowd. I thought that was kind of cute.
That was good, Bob.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Rick.
I watch it on occasion on ESPN.
You know what I miss on ESPN? Australian rules football.
Oh, my God. I was just going to say Australian rules football.
Didn't make a lick of sense, but those were some freaking athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Billable Rick, don't try to dig out, okay? Just don't.
What do you mean?
Billable Rick says, I saw the B-52s at a music festival on October 29th in Long Beach, and Fred Schneider, the male vocalist for the group, is still alive. The B-52s are playing in Solana Beach, California tonight. Wait a minute. Tom Petty survived for 9 days after I saw his last show. Watch out, Fred! Rick. Look, can somebody find Ted Nugent's tour schedule? And
send it to me.
And Kid Rock's. And send it to Billable Rick, or send it to me, and I'll share it with Billable Rick. Are there any other right-wing POS rock and rollers that we can send Rick to see?
I don't know any of them.
Well, I know they're there. If Michael and, well, he's Michael and Madison's probably at a concert tonight.
How about Billy Ray Cyrus?
He's not that right wing. I mean, Toby Keith is kind of, but he claims to be a Democrat. It's just that he's not going to miss an opportunity to write a million seller about Miss Liberty putting the pointy toe of her boot in some Iraqi ass.
Or how about Lee Greenwood?
Oh, now. Oh, were you listening when Marcy sent in the new lyrics for God Bless the CSA?
Yes, I was.
Was that brilliant or what?
Mm-hmm. Especially since she did it right there on the fly.
Can you reprise that tonight, Bob?
I've already sung.
That was lovely.
I've already sung once. I mean, and fundraising is not going well. What, are you trying to just wipe it out?
Maybe we could use that like as a challenge, like, stop Bob from singing, pledge $25.
That would work. And see, great minds think alike, because Randy and PA immediately sent an email. The only message was, Ted Nugent. Mm-hmm. So we finally got, yes, we've got an actual measurement. Randy and PA says, the main field, excluding the end zones in Canadian football, is actually 110 yards long, 55 yards in each direction. And then the end zone goes on forever. Oh, hey, there's one. Billable Rick, check your schedule. Ron and Raleigh says we could send him to see Dee Snider and Twisted Sister.
I think they were at the bowl not that long ago. I'm not sure.
Asa adds, and Justin Bieber while you're at it, Billable Rick.
I don't think I can stomach that.
What about Gene Simmons? Isn't he...
There you go. There you go. Good one. And, yeah, he's a Trump pansy.
And Roger in Minnesota says, hate to say it, but Brian May.
Really? That's surprising.
Hey Rick, I'll put a link in there for the Ted Nugent tour.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
you can get a two for he's gonna be in a concert with the Motor City Man, he says.
Oh my God. Well, I'm only going if he sings the Poontang song or whatever the hell it is that
Wang Dang.
Wang Dang Poontang. Jeez.
Sweet.
It's a contest probably. I don't know. Look at it.
Okay, I'll take a look at it.
Okay, here's a little bit of shallow for our Friday. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Oh, okay. No, stop before I go here. I guess I got to take back everything that I said to Todd last night about not body shaming Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags. Because the LA Times published an op-ed in which they referred to Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags was referred to as chunky. I'll be damned. So, yeah. But no, I ran across this one. This is kind of weird. Politico had a story. They went digging back into the dim, dark, and misty past of Kaiser Kumquat, and they found a video interview with Mother Trump. And it's pretty clear she's the biggest part of where he got his good looks. Let me see if I can get the audio to work here. This is something from something called America Wants to Know in 1990. She would have been 78 at the time, Mary Trump. And she was interviewed by Ernie Anastas.
Could you get Steve to mute, please?
Hey, is that you, Steve? Oh, okay. Yeah, thanks. All right. So Ernie Anastas interviewed Mary Trump, and this was at the time when the Donald was lacking the article, and he was just an amazing loser who was bankrupting a casino. But this is kind of telling. This is Mama. Don't say nothing about Mama. This is Mama talking about her precious little boy.
To know. I'm Ernie Anastas, and this is the... In 1992, I hosted a special show in New York where viewers asked a lot of questions about their favorite celebrities. Many, of course, were interested in Donald Trump and what he was like as a young boy growing up in Queens. I managed to catch up with Donald's parents, Mary and Fred Trump, and asked them what was Donald's favorite game as a child.
He played Monopoly. Yes, indeed. He played with his brother.
Yeah.
He played with Robert. But more than Monopoly, he played with building blocks. Always with building blocks.
Another question viewers wanted to know was, as a grown man now, how often did Donald Trump come visit his parents?
He comes very often.
Okay, once a week, would you say?
At least once a week he comes. He comes for dinner. He likes his mother's cooking.
Along with all of that, at one point she said, Mary Trump did, what kind of son have I created? That was during his divorce from his first wife. And when he was, going bankrupt all over the place. That's right. Mary Trump said, what kind of son have I created as far back as 27 years ago? Telling, isn't it? Oh, by the way, the list grows, Billable Rick. Roger in Minnesota also notes, you could go and see Peter Cetera. Now, we're not talking about people who are just being bad. We're talking about people who have turned right-wing, right-wing rock and rollers or right-wing musicians, right-wing artists, whatever.
Really? Peter Cetera.
Can I make another one? Go see Dennis Miller just to put him out of his misery.
Oh.
There you go.
Now, you'd have to be prepared to not laugh for about 90 minutes, though, right?
Yeah.
Azalea Banks. You know, she's a rapper, I guess, and I guess she was voiced her support for Trump, and then the day after he got elected, or November 9th, she posted on her Instagram how proud he was of him, and hashtag grab me by the pussy.
Oh, God. Who was that guy married to, one of the Kardashians who supported Trump?
Oh, Kanye?
Kanye? Yeah. I think we have to exclude rappers because I can't, you know, that's going to make my eardrum shatter.
You're just
guys.
Way,
I mean,
yeah,
I can
you're,
only
you're
take
just,
so much for the team.
You're just way too white for that. Yes, we understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Happens. Hey, John, by the way.
Oh, hey, guys. How's it going, man?
Oh, pretty good. You're a little, maybe overdriven, but apart from that, beautiful.
Oh, okay. I had a meeting yesterday, or we had our monthly meeting yesterday with our super, or not super PAC, but, you know, our PAC, our political action committee. And, you know, of course, just right after all the news about the DNC, and every single one of them, except for maybe a select few, said, that's it, I'm done. I'm done with the Democratic Party. I'm done. One guy even said he's going to register as Republican and try to turn a Republican Party into a progressive party, and I said, good luck. But I asked them, I said, can I just get up and make a speech real quick in light of all this? And they said, go ahead, you know, you got 5 minutes. And I said, you know, I know that what the DNC did last year was fucked up. I know that it probably was rigged and stuff. I said, but, you know, like, I said, we have a common, I used what you said, and I said, we have a common enemy right in our faces. I pretty much quoted what you said yesterday. And I said, because they're two states away from a constitutional convention. I said, think about this modern day Republican Party, the religiously insane right-wing nutbags that are going to write the Constitution for the next couple hundred years? I said, think about that, you know? And I said, and I just kind of went on a tangent about, it was an impassioned speech, actually. I was surprised I was actually able to, I felt like I was a politician or something, because I was very, all these thoughts were flowing. You know, it was a fluent speech. And I said, please, people, I said, don't make me bet. Please don't let this Republican Party gain more power. And then later on, everybody said, well, you know, there's other parties other than the Democratic and Republican Party. I said, but it doesn't matter. I said, by the time the Green Party gets enough power in Congress or whatever other party, I said, it'll be too late because they'll already be writing a new constitution.
You mean the year 3349?
Yeah, right. And I said, you know, and think about it. Think about who's probably going to preside as the president of the convention. Probably going to beat Donald fucking Trump. I mean, I don't know.
Hey, John, you know what scares me more? I wouldn't give it, you know, even odds or anything, but there's a chance that he doesn't like what he's doing. He may just declare victory and not run again. Cause he reached the pinnacle of power. And, you know, what do you do when you're standing on the top of Everest? Jump? I mean, jump up and down, and I'm taller than Everest. I'm jumping. There's nowhere else to go. And so a second term, eh. And so what?
You think so?
I'd say, you know, there's a 5% chance.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the Republicans are saying that it's not a sure thing he's going to be the nominee in 2020, I got to take him seriously. At least to that extent. But work with me here. I have said all along, what happens when some Republican comes along with the same evil ideas, who's actually got some understanding of the process and can get his agenda through? And so guess who's out there testing the waters for a primary challenge in 2020?
I saw John Kasich, but I got to tell you.
John Kasich, Tom Cotton of Arkansas, and Ben Sasse from Nebraska. And all three of those are just plain old fashioned reactionary conservative Republicans. Just because they know which finger to use to scratch their ass and which one to stick up their nose doesn't make them any less dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I saw that John Kasich's daughter, at least, voted for Hillary, apparently. And same with Giuliani's. You know, there's a couple of Republicans' daughters and shit that voted for Hillary and stuff, which, I don't know, it's, maybe that sheds a little bit of light on, maybe that will, you know, give a little bit of direction for him. But, you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, but I just don't see that happen because they said that he was never going to get the nomination in the first place, and look what happened. And you know, it's getting to a point now. When I saw the DNC stuff yesterday, when I opened up my email, you know, I was in good mood, just got off work and stuff. I opened up my email, and there was an email from what's that lady's name? Nina? No. Nina Turner. Nina Turner, the president of Our Revolution. It said the DNC was rigged. John Brazil just told the whole world that what we always suspected, the DNC was rigged. And Bob, my fucking heart just dropped to the floor because I knew that that's going to cost us 2018. It is. Because of governorship and all.
John, that response you had is the response it was intended to create. Okay?
Oh, I know. Yeah, you're right.
Politico broke the story with the excerpt. And they used the absolute juiciest excerpt they could find.
Yeah.
And they Politico is no friend to any Democrat, okay? They're not. They're lick spittles.
Yeah.
There's a reason Charlie Pierce refers to them as Tiger Beat on the Potomac.
Oh, so they're not the right wing then?
Well, they're not. They play at being neutral. But no, they I think they lean right. You know, you don't see any broadsheet op-eds coming from them calling for single payer health care now, do you?
Yeah, but, you're right. I never did see it.
But the thing is just to go a little further. Look, I read the story and I was like, yawn. Because
really?
Yeah,
I see it as a big problem, Bob.
No, John, it's a big problem. It's definitely a big problem because there's a bunch of tender-hearted little souls out there who never realized until this moment or until 2016 that politics in the United States is played dirty. They had no idea that anyone ever deviated from the Marquess of Queensberry rules. That there was no hitting below the belt, no rabbit punches, and no kidney punches, no eye gouging, no hair pulling, no wet willies to the ear, no groin kicks. It's a gentlemanly sport. It's like boxing. It's the sweet science. And my heart just broke for the little angels. Poor babies. Yeah. They had no idea politics in America was dirty. They had no idea that people who want power will do anything to get it. Poor little babies. Poor darlings.
Well, it must have been
worse than like a 7-year-old finding out about, you know, Anna Say Osclay.
Right. Well, I saw that Trump jumped right on it because, of course, this whole shit enables him and gives the Republicans more power. And he tweeted, oh, it was very unfair for Bernie. Motherfucker, you wanted Bernie to lose the primary. Bernie winning the primary would have been the worst case scenario for the Trump campaign. And they wanted Hillary to be president. As a matter of fact, I remember seeing, I don't know whose show it was on, but there was a panel and there were two people, one of which was a Hillary Clinton superdelegate and the other one was a delegate for Trump and a surrogate. And the person said to them, they were talking about this, it was right in the middle of the primary, and they're talking about these polling data between Trump and Hillary and then another poll between Trump and Bernie. And Bernie was beating Trump in the poll, but Trump was beating Hillary in the other poll. And the person, the host of the show, asked the two about that one at a time. And the Hillary superdelegate said, "I think I'd rather have Donald Trump than Bernie Sanders as president." And then the Trump surrogate when he was asked what he thought about that, and he says, for Hillary Clinton as the Democrat nominee is our best case scenario. Trump wants that. You know, so we all know that. So it's all fake when he says that shit. When he's talking about, oh, it was so unfair, you know, for that Bernie. It's like, you know, he's a lying piece of shit. We all know that. But you know what I'm saying? They're disingenuous is what I'm trying to say. And it's just, I told everybody at this meeting yesterday, I said, I find it pathetic for us to be fighting, or for when I say us, I mean Hillary supporters and Bernie supporters, to be fighting over this. We're having a discussion about this because we already know what happened. We've been through this a year ago, and now we're relitigating this. And then I just went on to say, the only discussion I want to have is how to reform the Democratic Party from the bottom up. And then everybody, we're done. I'm done with the Democratic Party. And then, you know, then I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big-time Republican.
Goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Goddamn DNC. If it hadn't been for the DNC, Bernie would have only lost by 1 million votes, not 3 million. God damn it. And I'm sorry. Right. I shouldn't do that. I apologize. I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't mock them. Because we need them. We need them in 2018. But for pity's sake, what? I mean, this isn't Operation by Milton Bradley, where there's a little buzzer that goes off and the nose lights up red when you touch the sidewalls of the game with the little metal tweezers when you're trying to take out the wrenched ankle.
Yeah, exactly. And then the hat Twitter hashtag winning was trending because that's what the Trump supporters think. Democratic Party is going to fall. It's going to collapse. And they want that. And I asked one. I said, I just wanted to be civil. And I said, can I ask you a question? This is on Twitter or through a comment. I said, do you want just the Republican Party to have absolute power? And they said, hell yes. So they want a dictatorship. What we're talking about here is a dictatorship.
Who are these folks, John? John, who are these folks that say they want a dictatorship, a one-party state?
Oh, these are open cult followers of Trump, also known as Trump supporters. We gotta start thinking of Trump as a cult leader because that's what he
well,
is.
Wait! One thing, John.
Trumpanzees.
Yeah, poofling and primates, Trumpanzees, maggots, things that feast on dead flesh.
They went crazy here in California the other day when the gas tax rose.
Oh, I'll imagine they did. But
12, it went up 12 cents.
That's why the prices are so high last time I filled up. Jeez, okay.
Yeah, but here's a funny thing. Being in California, you'll actually get something for your money.
Well, they had to do it because they couldn't sustain them. Highway system in this state without doing it.
And the feds aren't doing anything about it, you know, because they're totally gridlocked and deadlocked, you know?
Yeah.
So the states are taking action on their own.
But I wanted to point out one thing to John that's kind of important here, and that is there's nothing new about Republicans wanting a one-party state. If you remember the Reign of Error, do you remember how Carl Turd Blossom Rove bragged about how he was creating through his K Street connections a permanent Republican majority? And this is another one of those examples of the fact that it ain't all Trump, okay? Yes, the Trumpanzees are behaving this way. Yes, they're a member of a cult. But overall, a lot of the mindset has been inside the Republican Party for you know, going back to before Reagan was even elected president. Some of this shit is Nixonian, and a whole bunch of it is Goldwater Republicanism.
Yeah, you mentioned that a couple of times about I don't I didn't live back then. I don't know. I wasn't alive back then. But I don't see how that's applicable. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm wondering. It's actually a question. It isn't rhetorical or anything. Like, I'm actually asking how it is. Because Barry Goldwater just had a really brief stint, didn't he?
No, Barry Goldwater was a long-serving, right-wing Republican senator from Arizona. He penned a very famous book called The Conscience of a Conservative. And with those ideas coupled with the look, we know which piece of silverware to use, right-wingism of William F. Buckley, they made conservatism palatable to people who would otherwise have probably figured out that they meant them no good. I had, I was joking about, Enterprise came and got me because they're the company that picks you up. Well, they come and pick me up today. And the driver, he's come to get me before. He's a great guy. He's probably 85. And he's a he's a retired long haul truck driver who drove auto haulers, carrying cars to dealerships and stuff from the factory and whatnot. And he was a member of the Teamsters, and he is West Virginia through and through. And I wish there was some way I could have surreptitiously just turned on my camera and recorded him, because he would have blown your mind. Not just yours, John, but the entire Horn Family Community Congregation, and in larger measure, he would have blown the minds of every progressive broadcaster in this country, and most progressives, too. Because he sounded quintessentially West Virginian. He had the accent, and I'm not making fun, I'm not making sport. He had the kind of accent that people in other parts of the country hear and go, that person must be stupid. Because if you've got a hill country accent or a southern accent, there is a prejudice that immediately assumes that you've got to be dumb. And more truth came out of that man's mouth in the 20 minutes it took us to go from here to the office than you will hear in the vast majority of most of the radio broadcasts, including this one that people listen to. He said, among other things, he said, I can't figure out for the life of me what's happened to my state. People ran off and voted for that Republican governor, Jim Justice, when he ain't nothing but a coal hustler, and he was a Republican from get-go, and who in the world believed he had suddenly become a Democrat and was like FDR? Who in their right mind would fall for something like that? And so I tested the waters a little bit. I said, because, sometimes you can hear things and you'll get, and then, you cross that line. You get beyond their tolerance zone, their comfort zone. And frankly, often that's the case with, older Americans. So I looked at him and said, yeah, and you know what? I don't give a, when I get talking amongst my own ones, I talk like we talk around here. I said, you know what? I don't give a tinker's damn if two guys or two women want to get married. That hadn't got a damn thing to do with whether or not me and my wife can get along. The only people responsible for our marriage is me and her. And I thought, we'll find out. And he looked at me and he said, ain't that the damn truth? And in the matter of a minute or two, if progressives all over this country could have heard that, they would have gone, wait a minute. This isn't who we've been told West Virginians are. And I said, and ain't nobody going to come and get nobody's guns, because that's the other thing that'll get them worked up. And he said, nope, couldn't if they wanted to, could they? I said, uh-uh. And nobody, and 8 years of Barack Obama and not a single gun got confiscated. He, nope. And then he said, and that man was a better president than we know he was, and history will be better than history, and history will judge him well. And, oh, I wish people could have heard him. He was a joy. He said, I grew up in the Depression. He said, I was a kid in the Depression. Which would, I imagine he was probably born somewhere around, 1933, 1935, something like that. If he was born 1934, he'd be 83. And he said, I grew up in the Depression. I remember it. And he said, I know how FDR saved our lives. And I know how important Social Security is. And I know how important the pension is. And he said, these kids around here today, he said, these Republicans want a family to have four people working $10 an hour jobs at minimum wage just to get by. And he said, and you can't have no life on that. You need a union. That man had more force and more power in his beliefs than probably 99% of the union presidents in this country. You're right. Just got an email from Steve saying he's a real life Trey Crowder. But well, yeah. So I mean, on the one hand, the things that we point out, the realities that we point out, I mean, it ain't made up. I mean, for instance, because this is one of those little burrs under my saddle I've been sitting on for a couple of days. We all know what big brothers and big sisters are, right? It's a mentoring program. You take kids who are badly in need of some sort of adult influence in their lives, and you pair them up with a big sister, big brother volunteer. Well, the Big Sisters, Big Brothers program in West Virginia found itself suddenly down $80,000. And they don't have a lot of money. They found themselves suddenly without $80,000 of donor money that they counted on for their budget every year. To cover the cost of all this mentoring and everything. And running the program. The reason they lost $80,000 is because Big Brothers and Big Sisters of West Virginia got in line with not being bigots. They declared that they would not, that they wouldn't stop somebody from being a big brother or a big sister because they were gay. And whoop, $80,000 in donor money disappeared. Because at-risk kids don't need a gay mentor. It was sickening.
Those donors are probably running rabbits when they heard that news, Bob, Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're scrambling to catch up to make up for that shortfall through other donor sources. But of course, you know who it was that pulled that money. I mean, it's not a mystery, is it? Anybody want to take a guess? Steve?
The evil Jellicles.
The good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian evil Jellicles.
Yeah.
Because at-risk children can just go on being at-risk if they're going to be mentored by a Homer sectional, because they're just trying to foist their Homer sectional ways on our precious little at-risk churins.
They've got an agenda, Bob, right?
Well, that's that's the first thing they do. They get them in the car and they hand them a copy of the gay agenda, and the next thing you know, they're listening to show tunes.
Well, hopefully they can get some alternative sources of funding from, non-bigoted, donors. I imagine they will, And fuck the evangelicals,
Yeah, but God damn, really? In the almost the end of the second decade of the 21st century, and we're still doing this.
We've never made it to the 21st century, Bob. We, you know, we had,
well,
you know,
speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. You're in L.A.
Well, okay.
I got to have a little hope out here. I got to think that the 21st century is doing things out in other parts of the country.
It's just working its way maybe from the west to the east and from the east to the west, Bob. So at some point it'll hit West Virginia.
Yeah, in about 2364.
Jeez. When Jill Stein is president, right?
Absolutely. Wait. And we banned radio waves.
Jeez.
Yeah, I'm in a weird place. I want at the same time, I want more people like that fella whose past informs him as to the trouble we're in the present, and then we also need people in the present who understand that the bigotries of the past no longer obtain.
It's too bad we don't have a some kind of a tool to zap the you know, white, old, rural, racist males and get rid of them and make way for the next generation, you know, Bob?
Yeah.
And keep the older folks who are, you know, good progressives like your, you know, like the Enterprise driver, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's got to go sometime, though.
Yeah. That's true.
Hello?
Yeah, hey, Steve.
Hello. Yeah, I it's interesting when I'm listening to this. My grandmother was probably, I don't know how old she was. My grandmother was an Eisenhower Republican. As much as I miss her, I'm kind of glad that she and my grandpa are gone, not seeing what's going on right now, because I can't imagine, I don't know what she would do seeing what has happened to her party. In any event, my grandparents, and particularly my grandmother, you know, were from small town Ohio, probably conservative, more in the reserved, cautious sense than in the, you know, teabagger sense, certainly. And I remember somebody, and my grandmother's brother, said to her one day that she thought that I was gay. And she turns to him and says, I don't care what he is. He's my grandson and I love him. And again, I say this because my grandparents, certainly my grandmother, was not a big old, you know, necessarily a progressive, progressive Democrat. But and I think what's really lacking here is decency. You know, decency didn't seem to be exclusive to one party, but it's gotten to the point where we have a absolutely hateful, vindictive party and everybody else. And at what point it became that, I don't have any idea. You know, I can remember growing up, even during the 80s, and not forget about Reagan and all that, but I remember, like, certainly Republicans in the House who were, you know, decent people. They weren't these ugly scumbags that Newton Leroy ushered in. I remember Bob Michael was the minority leader. And then you think of Howard Baker, Nancy Kassebaum, and all these people who were probably moderate to conservative and certainly would be moderates nowadays. But they didn't have that hateful streak.
Everything changed in 1996.
No, I say 94 when the Republicans took over the House.
Fox News was born in 1996.
Yes. Yes. A funny thing about that. Have you guys ever seen the documentary Outfoxed?
Oh yeah.
Several times.
I was watching that the second time I was watching it and noticed one of the guys in there was a guy who goes to my church. And he worked in D.C., and I started asking him about it. And he worked at, I think it was Fox 5 in D.C., and he said he worked there before and after Murdoch took over. And he told me the difference was palpable.
that after Murdoch took over, they would get, they literally would get talking points every day. Here's what you had, or stories that you had to focus on, things that you had to say. He says it was, it started off, it was kind of subtle, and then it got very, very blatant. But anyway, back to what I was saying, they're just, I mean, I don't know, you remember this, Bob, when there just didn't seem to be the hatred and the nastiness, even on the GOP side that there is now. I think Sparky's right that a lot of it has to do with Fox News and Newton Leroy.
I got one more for you if you want to look to causation, because this goes back considerably earlier than the rise of Fox News. In fact, early on, he advertised Fox News heavily to his audience, and that's part of how they got the audience they got. And I'm talking about, of course, the oxymoron Flush Flimball.
Yeah, or I like to call him Rush Hemorrhoid.
The walking Palandial cyst himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing the things that we've learned will keep you out of Vietnam just by studying the lives of Republicans who didn't go there. Bone spurs will keep you out of Vietnam. Trump taught us that. A Palandial cyst will keep you out of Vietnam. Rush Limbaugh taught us that. Shit in your pants will keep you out of Vietnam. Ted Nugent taught us that. Right, John?
Well, I joined the Air Force to keep my ass out of Vietnam, hopefully.
Yeah, but you showed up. You know, I don't recall any interviews with Spark.
I didn't have much choice. My draft number was going to be called.
Right, but the point I'm trying to make is I don't recall any interviews with Sparky and Howard Stern in which you declared that the 1990s were your sexual Vietnam.
No, Okinawa and Thailand were my sexual Vietnam.
Only they were Okinawa and Thailand.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but no, Rush Limbaugh, Steve, in my mind, I mean, he exists on a continuum. There were other right-wing haters before him, but he's the one that turns it into a thing, okay? I happen to remember what talk radio was like before Rush Limbaugh because I was working in talk radio before Rush Limbaugh. I remember the ABC Talk Radio Network, which was an entire lineup from start to finish of talkers, and you know what? Most of them were either moderate, centrists, or to the left. I remember I'd run a board shift during the program. The LA contingent can answer this. How long have you been in LA?
32 years now, Bob.
Okay, so 17. All right, you might remember him. Do you remember a guy with a British accent named Michael Jackson?
I was just thinking of that. He was on KABC 790.
Well, we were running him on WVNA AM 1590 in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle. And we ran him every day, and he was really enjoyable to listen to.
He was. He was.
Part of the time we ran programs from the NBC radio network, things like Sally Jesse Raphael, problems. Everybody's got them. Hi, I'm Sally Jesse Raphael, and we'll work through them together on my program every night here on... And this is before she got a TV program.
That she was from Wisconsin, I assume.
No, she just was very... I don't know where she was from, but she was just very... Problems. She was very nasal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, you want to establish the timeline, Bob?
That would be 1986.
Well, Rush Limbaugh in 1987 was on KFBK out of Sacramento, California.
That's where he really gets going.
Yeah, so that's where he gets his start.
Was that after he'd been a failed sports announcer?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's after his job ends as part of the marketing department of the Kansas City Royals.
Okay.
All I know is I actually listened to him back then because I was driving up and down the freeway from Redding to Sacramento to go to work.
And that's when it all begins to change. I left that little talk radio station fairly shortly thereafter and went to Atlanta and started working for CNN. And that's when I first heard Mike Malloy. There was kind of a level playing field at that point in time, because remember WSB was a 50,000 watt blowtorch, and Mike Malloy's working the 9 to midnight. So that means he's riding on those 50K. And so he's heard all over, and I mean, oh my God, oh, it was wonderful. I'd get off work at 10 o'clock and listen till midnight. And on the nights I wasn't working, I'd listen from 9. But that's the same time that Limbaugh is on the rise. And in fact, I remember when Mike went to, and Mike probably doesn't even know this. He'd probably wash his brain out with bleach if he knew. I heard Limbaugh one time when Mike was at WLS in Chicago. And Limbaugh praised him up one wall and down the other, as you know, as a brilliant and powerful voice on the air at our affiliate WLS in Chicago or something like that. I mean, it has stayed with me all these years because I knew what Limbaugh was and I knew what Malloy was. I was like, damn.
Was that like an ad in which he promoted Malloy as another talker, or what was it exactly?
No, it wasn't a promo. It was, if I recall correctly, it was in the middle of a live segment.
Oh, wow.
That's very intriguing. Why? He had to know that because he was
promoting one of his. That's the key, the mention. It's not the stuff where you break programming and run an ad or a promo runs after a commercial. The stuff that has the real impact with listeners, see, I'll tell you these things, is the stuff that you mention in the middle of everything else. If you remember, and you may not, John, Paul Harvey. The guy would be talking about the woman who gave birth to a litter of 12 beagles in Ottumwa, Iowa. And you know what, friends? If you're a woman who's just given birth to a litter of 12 beagles in Ottumwa, Iowa, you need to head down to your friendly Ace Hardware store, where they've got lots and lots of choices in the way of dog cages and whelping pens and when they get a little bigger, you can build them a little fenced-in enclosure with the woven wire. You can get down at your friendly Ace Hardware store right there in your hometown. Good day. And you've just had an ad run down your throat, and it went in at the same time that regular content was going in, and so you're more likely to go down because you need something at your friendly Ace Hardware store.
I listened to Paul Harvey religiously every lunchtime for a while.
I did when I was in high school. We actually wrote to him. My high school friend wrote to him, and actually, I think got a response from him.
You had a friend?
Yeah. Can you believe that? Yeah.
Paid him well. I trust.
He's still my friend.
Oh, I haven't seen him in concert.
So he's still alive?
Oh yeah. Not Paul Harvey. No, my friend is. Yeah, he lives back in Connecticut.
Little cowbell just for the insanity of it.
Paul Harvey was only like a 5-minute segment or something.
No, but it's the he had the rest of the story.
Sure. Yeah,
he sounded like the abandoned baby orphan brother of Katharine Hepburn. but that's what it was kind of like that. It was just in medias res, and it stuck with me all those years. And I was like, I wonder if Malloy knows, because you know Malloy probably would have gone looking for him. Don't you ever? But you know, he was just cross promoting a colleague that was running on that station. And of course, ratings wise, Mike owned the airwaves in Chicago at that point in time in that day part. So
was that before he when him and Molly got married? Not Molly, Kathy got married. I guess she must have been with him there too, right? Because
no. It's interesting. I went to a meeting. They came to New York for Molly was singing in a choir, and I went to a gathering where Mike was there, and actually Sam Cedar was there, and Tara Devlin was there, and Kathy talked about when she started dating Mike, and she said that when she first heard him, I think it was on W. Oh no, maybe it wasn't.
No, WSB.
Oh, that's right. Because she said when she first heard him, she thought he was gay, and she went through the whole story of how she took him cookies. Yeah, she took him cookies. She just showed up at the station and took him cookies, and
Kathy can cook and bake.
Oh, I know it. He says that on the program all the time. But no, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. They were in. Yeah, you're right. They were actually in Chicago together. I guess I got the story. I got the place wrong, but the story right.
Did they meet Kathy's in Atlanta wonderful. Then? Did they meet in Chicago or Atlanta?
Atlanta. Kathy's an Atlanta girl.
Atlanta accent.
Now, he has a bunch of kids and grandkids, though, right? Other than Molly. I mean, I know he talked about Chris.
Who
he barely remember his age. He goes, well, how old is Chris, Kathy? And I'm thinking 39, I think, right?
I think because Chris is over 40 now. He was talking about Chris the other night.
Right,
John. Yeah, he's certainly much older than Molly is.
Oh, and by the way, just a couple of people putting pieces into the puzzle. Clarence reminds us, you know, before there was Limbaugh, there was Bob Grant, a genuine POS, and Bill just wrote in to say, I haven't heard anybody mention Frank Luntz, the guy who came up with a word list that he gave to Newton Leroy Gingrich to pummel every Democrat. That's where Democrat Party comes from, because it emphasizes the rat sound. By taking the IC off the, because everybody knew it was the Democratic Party, but thanks to Frank Luntz and Newton Leroy Gangrene, amateur paleontologist, it became the Democrat Party, and it stuck like glue.
And Haley Barbour, I mean, I worked in D.C. I was a member of congressional staff in '96, back in my super right wing days. And yes, those did exist. And yeah, that's something else I was going to say, Bob. This is the other thing that got me noticing when the tone changed. I think this is probably the grandbaby of the moral majorities, when religion became so intertwined with Republican politics, and not just religion, but the moral majority, extreme right wing, you know, Church of the Right Wing God stuff.
That was the late 70s. That was the late 1970s, leading up to Reagan's election.
Yes, leading up to Reagan's election. And that was really the precursor for Newton Leroy, when he was like the fire-throwing backbencher in the late 80s and early 90s, and he got rid of Jim Wright. And then that's what led to 94. But I mean, there was the religion became intertwined, and you know what, when religion gets intertwined in your politics, you no longer disagree with people. They're evil and you're good, and you know, at that point there's no compromise. And that's when things really started to metastasize. And you throw hemorrhoid in there, you throw Newton Leroy in there, and you throw that religious crap in there, and that's where we are. I mean, I was there in 96. I saw it. I was in the midst of it. I worked for one of the most right wing Republicans who was up there. Somebody put together a list called Newt's Toadies, and it was basically people who towed the line. And my boss was number 20 on that list. There was a list of 20. He was number 20. Sonny Bono was 19.
I don't know who all the other ones were, but my boss was from the sixth district in Ohio, which is down near. Bob probably knows the area. It's Portsmouth and that area down there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, you mentioned Sonny Bono. I have to do this real quick, Steve.
Yeah.
Sonny, Sonny, Sonny of the ski slopes. Watch out for that tree.
Oh, jeez. Bob, if there's a hell, you just got yourself a one-way ticket.
I had a guy who actually claimed that Sonny Bono was killed by the CIA.
Well, probably Hillary.
There you go. Yeah, it wasn't Henry's fault. It was Hillary's fault because she's the devil.
Can I just tell you, he was dumber than a box of rocks. I saw him one time in a mall in D.C. You know, I don't know if you know Pentagon City Mall, Bob.
Oh, yes. Crystal City.
Yeah, Crystal City, Pentagon City. I saw him in there one time, went up to him to say hello, and he just looked at me with this kind of mouth agape, like, who the hell are you? And I said, I'm just here to say hi. And he, dumber than a box of rocks, probably almost as dumb as my boss was. But John, did you want to ask me something, John?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to interject in the middle of everything, but something just popped in my head. I was wondering, since you're a staffer, I was wondering if you could tell me if this is allowed or not. But I called my congressman the other day, the other week, and I was in a bad mood. I guess I was a little bit of a jerk. Not really, but like I kind of gave my opinion a little bit. I said, you know, Scott Perry is going to vote on this. I forget what it was. And I said, he obviously doesn't represent the people of this district. He represents the special interest. And the girl on the other end got all pissed off. No, he doesn't. You know, and just argued with me. And then I said about how Trump is a maniac because she got me, you know, a little bit, you know, excited because of her being rude. And then I said, you know, Trump's a maniac. And he votes alongside this maniac in the White House 90% of the time. And she goes, yeah, because Trump's a maniac. I'm wondering, is that allowed or what?
Depends on the office. I mean, you're not supposed to speak that way to constituents, but certainly you have to understand that a lot of time the office reflects the character of the member of Congress or the senator. Chances are that congressman is a prick, and the person hires pricks because they're probably pricks around the office.
That's part of the general complaint that comity. And that friend, you know, that friendly sense of competition is gone from Washington, D.C. And, oh, we all miss Everett Dirksen and how he used to sit down and pull a beagle up by the ear, pull up LBJ's beagle by the ears because they were friends. And, oh, golly, there was an interview with John McCain where he talked about how he'd fight with Edward Kennedy. And meanwhile, you know, Flimball's out there on the air in the modern era going, God damn Ted Kennedy, world hypocritic, give me another pill. Oh, by the way, you want? Hey, Steve, you want to hear me throw another log on the fire in hell?
Sure.
Well, we can't take Dennis when we go for a swim because he's going to get drunk and he's going to fall in. He's going to drown. He's going to drown. Okay.
My God.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Oof. You just confirmed your reservation, Bob.
Who is Dennis? Who is Dennis?
Dennis, Bob? Dennis Wilson.
Is he a congressman that died, that drowned?
No. The Beach Boys.
Oh, the Beach Boys. He's another guy. He's a right winger.
No, Brian Wilson. Yeah, Mike Love is you can go see Mike Love anytime you want to.
Okay, Brian Wilson is that way too, I think.
Okay, so just go see the Beach Boys.
Let me just ask you this: Do we have a like grandfather? Do we grandfather any of these right wing rock stars in just because, you know, they have sufficient talent such that, you know, we don't want them to like?
We haven't named. Okay, the only one
I
we've
heard
got
that Pete Townsend would be a Tea Party guy.
Well,
interviewed and said he'd be a Tea Party guy.
Ew.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the closest we've gotten on the list so far. As provided by Roger in Minnesota, is probably Brian May. Yeah, goddamn brilliant guitarist. Jeff Skunk Baxter from the Doobie Brothers, he's another one. He's a rocket scientist and a right winger.
Well, I actually saw them this summer, and he's still alive, so I guess, you know, he's got an exemption.
Well, no, your powers were not at their zenith yet.
I was too far from the stage. That was the problem. I was in the upper deck.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we got 23 minutes left to go in the program. Let me do a little bit of quick math. Thanks to Juanita and the opening salvo from Asa and the $5 from Larry. Thank you all very kindly. We are down to $335 to go so that we won't be in a hole when I come back on a week from this evening. And that way we can have a fundraising-free Friday. $330 to go. 33 at 10, 10 at 33. And remember, if you want Jerry Lee Lewis to continue to be able to be the killer, there's some irony. Then you've got to stop Billable Rick from going to the Jerry Lee Lewis show, and that's gonna take how many people, Rick, kicking in to your challenge? 25 at a time.
I think 10. Was it 15 at 25? I'll reduce it to 10 at 25.
Okay, well, that would get us a big chunk of the way, and then we know that he won't be in the audience when Jerry Lee Lewis plays.
Hey, Mark Warner from Grand Funk Railroad. He was one. What's the guy? Huckabee. I mean, he's a right winger. I think he's a hardcore right winger. Actually, yeah, he's real. He's from Flint, Michigan. I think maybe all of them might be Grand Funk Railroad I'm talking about.
Well, they were at the LA County Fair last summer. I didn't go to that. I didn't go there. It's a good thing. I didn't make it to that show last year.
They're a great band. That's a real shame, man, because Mark Farner is a pretty good guitarist and singer. And, I saw like he was on Huckabee's show a couple years ago or 10 years ago or something.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that creative artists can be right wingers, because in order to tap into that creativity, you've got to, I guess be maybe more liberal. Maybe I'm full of hot air. I don't know. But
yeah, I let me ask a question. It occurs to me, the people that Rick has seen who've passed, have they all been lefties or liberals?
Actually, it's only been one guy, Steve. It's Tom Petty. He died 9 days after I saw his last show.
It suddenly occurs to me, given that evil is a preservative, that the powers might not work on the right wingers.
Yeah. Well, look at Henry Kissinger, Dick Cheney, right?
Yeah, but we never know until he tries. We've got to get him to a Ted Nugent show or a Kid Rock show. I mean, those are because those are NRA scumbags too. So
does somebody have a weapon I could borrow to go to the show with?
No, quit that.
No. I mean to protect myself.
No, you'll be protected by your Sith powers.
Okay.
I don't think you want my gun. It's too conspicuous.
Okay, I'll pass on it. What, you got an M18 or something?
No, I got a .22 High Standard.
Oh,
kind of looks like a German Luger in a way.
Okay, I'll pass then. Thanks.
If you don't shoot it right, it'll tear the skin off between your thumb and your first finger.
Oh my God, that's not good.
Oh, we're running out of time, but I want to offer a quick update on the Colorado shooter that somehow managed to stay out of the news because he was so very white. They've dug it. They can't find a motive per se, but they've dug around in his neighborhood and questioned some neighbors. Teresa Muniz said he never said hello. No one ever came to visit him, and I thought that was strange. He wouldn't say nothing to us, but he talked to the only white couple who lives here. I don't understand where that hatred comes from. Then another resident who saw inside Ostrom's apartment during his arrest said there was hardly any furniture in there except a TV, a lawn chair, and a table. He slept on blankets on the floor. There was a stack of 5 Bibles on the floor and 5 more stacked on the table.
Did he have Fox News on the TV, Bob?
Well, we don't know. Maybe it...
Okay.
Police say Ostrom had a minimal criminal history, including resisting arrest charge from 1999 and one for DUI in 2003. Ostrom filed for bankruptcy in 2015 after he started an electronics business that failed after a year and a half. But he had him a bunch of Bibles and a bunch of hate, and, of course... was complete.
He found Jesus in the NRA at the same time.
And that is never a good thing, Sparky.
Did he have any maggot hats at his residence or not?
No mention of a maggot hat.
Okay.
Okay. Freight Train Frank with a quick question. What do the city of Seattle... and Cher have in common? Neither one is fucking Sunny.
That's a good one.
That's an oldie but a goodie. Sorry, we're just jumping on the bellows tonight, aren't we? Oh, okay. This is going to be problematic because this Friday on the front porch is a bunch of guys, well, a bunch of white guys sitting around talking is what it boils down to. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we're lacking some perspective here. So I mentioned earlier that in an op-ed in the LA Times, Neil Horsey, who is a brilliant editorial cartoonist, referred to Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags as chunky. And this then occasioned an outcry of how godforsaken sexist that is, and why must people always comment on the appearance of women? I'm neither defending nor criticizing the comment, at least until we reach a consensus. Is chunky a gender reference now?
No.
Because
I would
think,
say no.
Because I think I was referred to as a kid as chunky.
Yeah, I was too.
Stocky is also used commonly to refer to the same thing, so...
Now, husky has a little bit more of a gender reference to it, insofar as that tends to be used on guys. Husky.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's gender based.
But okay, so here's the question I'm asking. We don't okay, and maybe this just means we're in the wrong all the way around. We don't have any problem, and I haven't seen anybody. Posting outrage about the fact that, say, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third is occasionally referred to as an evil Keebler elf. Now, I don't think there's any gender reference in there either, but you know that he looks like the fucking Keebler elf with those big ass ears, and you know, you give him the little green hat, and he's right there.
You forgot to wear a pasty in front of the Keebler elf. Pasty Keebler elf, Bob.
It's just descriptive. He's an elf.
Yeah, he does.
So can Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags be chunky? Now, okay. To be fair, I guess he didn't leave it at chunky. He did genderize it because he said what his observation was that. She seems to run against type for the kind of women with whom the insane clown posse grabber associates himself. To wit, and Horsey made the reference, tall, leggy, beautiful women wearing spike heels.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. That type fits Kellyanne Conway. But yeah, that's generally correct. you know, except for those two.
So Horsey said, by comparison, Sanders looks more like a slightly chunky soccer mom who organizes snacks for the kids' games. Rather than the fake eyelashes and formal dresses she puts on for news briefings, Sanders seems as if she'd be more comfortable in sweats and running shoes. So
sounds
I guess
like some of the women I've dated, Bob.
I guess that does genderize it somewhat. And you know, I don't have any women to look to in this particular conversation for some input on it. So I apologize in advance, but I welcome the input. Because you know, I make fun of people's appearance all the time. Why? Well, for starters, because I make fun of my own appearance. Remember me? The guy who's so damned white he can't open the refrigerator and put his hand under the light bulb without getting radiation poisoning? The pinkest man in America? Me, Bob? So are appearances completely off limits? I mean, do we have to stop referring to Donald Trump as pumpkin spice president because he's orange?
I think some people just deserve it, Bob. You kind of know it when you see it.
Well, and for those people who have any passing familiarity with rules for radicals, then you know that ridicule is one of the strongest tools in the box. And this is a form of ridicule. And Jesus jumping Christ, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is revolting. I mean, she is an odious human being from an odious family of hypocrites and grifters and gospel sharps.
I think that would be true, Bob, regardless of how she looked.
I think so, too. Kellyanne Conway and she have absolutely nothing in common in terms of appearances, but they are both odious human beings. They're just both awful examples of attempts at membership in the human race.
Skeletor and Conway?
There we go.
No, she's the Crypt Keeper.
There you go.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the more you see these people and hear them talk, the uglier they get just from the inside out. You know what I'm saying?
And Horsey, you know, beyond having a brilliant caricature style, has a hell of a wit. So this piece that he wrote that the LA Times published said it showed. Horsey's work reminds me of the work, for those of you who are of a certain age, what was his name? Sergio Argonez, Mad Magazine. Remember him? It's sort of a realistic cartooning I don't know how to describe it, but it just reminds me of his work. And so she's standing at the podium, in some sort of awful gray thing. And of course he accentuates all of her bad features. And the speech balloon out to her side says, "War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. Paul Manafort is Hillary Clinton." By the way, Darlene in Connecticut, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate this. Darlene says, Fox News is getting all hysterical, calling it fat shaming. Fox News, of all things, that won't hire a female anchor or reporter over 90 pounds. Or, you know, what my wife refers to as an infant size zero. And I didn't know there was infant size zero in women's wear, but by God, there's a size zero. It's like clothing for invisible people. Meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport says, Bruno Mars has a song off his latest album, 24K Magic, called Chunky, that makes definite references to the ladies. Whether that is enough to change the sense of the word, who knows? I'm just saying. Gee, you know what I remember? I remember when, we were talking about the rise of Rush Limbaugh, right? He started probably back in Sacramento, Sparky, referring to the Feminazis.
Well, I don't remember that.
And then there's the millions of times that he's referred to, made sexual references to Hillary Clinton, and how many right wingers have referred to women as having cankles.
But, and don't forget what Rush said about Sandra Fluke as well. You know, that basically cost him all his advertisers.
Slut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, he hurt the entire talk industry by the attack on Fluke, because advertisers pulled their ads from all radio programming, regardless.
Yeah, because it was only fair. It was only fair that if they were going to pull their ads from a right winger who called a woman a slut, that they should pull their ads from people who didn't.
Yes, of course. Yes,
chicken
exactly.
Shit.
Proportionality, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Charlie, by the way, with an email says, in regard to the Huckabee family, Bob, you left out Holy Rollin' Pigs. I did, and I regret the error.
You know, Bob, I was thinking about the whole Chunky thing. I recall that there was actually a kid in the Goonies was nicknamed Chunk. Little boy.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a gender-specific
term. I guess it's not so much the Chunky as it is the soccer mom part and how she looks like she'd be more comfortable in sweats and tennis shoes. But
snacks for the kids.
But then again, let's remember that odious human being went out and stood behind a podium and critiqued another female for wearing hats. But suddenly it's all hands off, precious Sarah.
Oh, so she's fair game then. Okay, I get that. Yeah, I'll go along with that, Bob.
Arthur,
she brought it on herself.
Arthur offering up some perspective. Sarah is big or chunky. It's just that women are tired of being judged by their looks or as a piece of meat. I agree. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. But when someone is shitty, because remember, hey Steve, could you mute for just a second, please? Thanks. Hey, video of New York City. Wow. When someone is shitty, unless you are a Christian, which I'm not, you know, you're supposed to turn the other cheek and all that baloney. Well, I don't have to do that. Because with this bunch, if you turn the other cheek, well, you know, Jesus said turn the other cheek that they can strike that one too. Well, they will. You turn the other cheek, they strike that cheek, then they kick you in the balls, get you down on the ground and stomp your goddamn guts out. So I'm not inclined to play nice with this bunch.
They started it, Bob, right?
And yeah, I realize that's kind of a juvenile approach to things, but he swung first as a legal defense, isn't it, Billable?
It definitely is, yeah. And our politics really has devolved to that level. So you've got to fight fire with fire, man. You know, don't bring a... don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Don't try to, play kumbaya with these. You know,
I was going to say, freaks. Do not sing kumbaya to somebody all wasted on the stump liquor.
Exactly. Yeah.
Keith down Texas way says, Bob, in the Southern terms that I grew up with, Sarah is big boned. Big boned. And I've heard that, too.
You ever heard the term built like a brick shithouse?
Yeah, but that is not usually something that was used to refer to, well, no. No, because it's a joke. She's built like a brick shit house, stacked.
Oh, she's a brick house. That's it for me.
Yeah, no singing from you. Hey, yeah. Wait, don't sing Lionel Richie.
He's a good liberal.
Is he?
Yeah, he sang it at one of Hillary's rallies at the Greek Theater.
Goddamn Hillary!
When Bernie was relegated to...
Oh, wait, wait, no, he's... Oh, wait, he's an establishment shill?
Yes. Yeah, Bernie was forced to speak outside, not at the L.A. Coliseum, but outside of the Coliseum, like the way to get, you know, he was barred from the Coliseum, so he was like, you know, speaking just outside of the Coliseum, like the courtyard. And Hillary gets to speak at the Greek before the California primary. So there you go.
Jeez. Yeah. Look, we just got a couple of minutes left. Let me be clear about this. I have my fun, and I poke my fun, because I get fun poked at me. And, you know, at the end, I hope that we've all got a little bit of alligator hide about us. You kind of have to if you're going to do the politics thing. It is a contact sport. And in the final analysis, what happened in 2016 and the degree to which it was a serious problem or not, and not everyone is convinced that it was the brooga, 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 oh my God, OMG, zounds, problem that it is being portrayed as by people with agendas, it's in the past. Neither Debbie Wasserman Schultz nor Donna Brazile is running the DNC. Tom Perez is. The question is, what is the DNC going to do going forward? Ralph Northam had a governor's race in Virginia that was his to lose, and apparently he may very well do that because he screwed it up and is held to, and it's kind of like the Sarah Huckabee Sanders thing. He's held to a different standard. Ed Gillespie, former RNC chairman, is running for governor on the Republican side, and he has run a gubernatorial campaign that is nothing but wall-to-wall racism. Ralph Northam, on the other hand, not so much. He ran a really terrible ad that offended people, and so now they're going to walk away, and Ed Gillespie may wind up governor of the old Commonwealth of Virginia. And then there's the question of, Alabama. We are 1 month and 9 days away from that election, and Doug Jones could win it. And yet at the same time, I was just over at Crooks and Liars, and lo and behold, there they are publishing an article that says what? What's the, okay, check out this early... I mean, this is like the first line within, or it's the first paragraph. Roy Moore was a complete joke in law school, too, by Joe Patrice, posted with permission at Crooks and Law, or at Crooks and Liars from Above the Law. He was Looney Tunes from the beginning. So says Crawford Melton, an Alabama attorney who went to law school with Alabama senatorial candidate Roy Moore. That's a ringing endorsement. Moore, the judge twice removed from the bench for his inability to see an established ethical code he can't breach, is likely to win that Senate seat soon. Well, he's only likely to win that Senate seat if we don't get out there and fight for that Senate seat. But with statements like that, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So there we go. Well, listen, we've run out of time. Thank you very kindly to John and to Billable Rick and to Steve and, of course, to Sparky and everybody who's written in and participated in this Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to everybody in the chat room. I have a heck of a good time on Friday on the Front Porch. And, you know, we will eventually try to sort through these cultural issues that seem persistently so to dog us. In the meantime, we will, we'll talk again a week from tonight. And we will close the program needing to raise something on the order of $330. And hopefully that'll happen because that will close the fundraising gap for the rest of the week. And we'll be able to go forth and have a fundraising free Friday a week from tonight and cover the bases for my absence.
And again, I'll let y'all know where and when and how to tune in to see what we're doing in D.C. Next week. In the meantime, again, thanks to everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks all week long to Sparky and to Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend and a great week, everybody. We'll talk soon.